in Montana, ag is king, and it always has been. It represents anywhere. Sometimes you got good years, and it's $5 billion industry or more. Sometimes the years are not so good, and it's a $2 billion industry. But we are all in the state of Montana when it comes to agriculture, and when it comes to really what agriculture stands for, the good values behind a hard day's work, you know, and being your independent boss as well, and making it a family enterprise as well as a community enterprise. So, you know what? One thing that we don't do enough, I think, is thank the farmers. That's not going to be the case today. We are out. It's For the Farmers Tour today and also this entire week on Voices of Montana. Welcome here. We are from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. And great to have you joining us once again. We are live. You're probably catching a little bit of feedback here, and I'll work on that right now. But we are live at Helena Agra Enterprises here. And this is like an astounding facility, really. And we're going to talk with a couple of employees. And also, we got a lot, just a whole list here of issues that we want to talk about. Trade's one thing, right to repair. I understand that beer consumption is down a little bit in the country, and I'm not happy about that. And it's not my fault, I'll tell you that as well. Hey, welcome you guys. Two decades strong and working on three from Montana for Montana. Guests today lining up here, but we also have Colton Young with us and Coulter Brown, who's Northern Ag Network's director, and Colton, of course, farm broadcaster. Good morning, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us on here, Tom.
Tom, it's amazing you get paid to do this. You just get to come out, have fun, drink a little beer. What a job.
I know. Don't ruin it for me either. Okay. A bit later on, Lee Dahlman will join us. He's from Dutton. He actually was on those trade missions overseas. It was Taiwan and South Korea. Eric Summerfield from Power, producer. These are all producers. Right to repair is a big issue for them. Mitch Conan's going to join us as well from Fairfield. Of course, Mitch, president of the National Barley Growers Association. So we'll talk about... as I mentioned, you know, looking for new barley markets as well. But we're going to open this one up with Steve Sheffels and a host of others here from Helena Agra Enterprises. Steve, president of the Montana Grain Growers Association.
Morning, Tom.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Good to hear that. Yeah, and then also over there on the other side is Tyler Visti and Doug Bratton. And I asked him, you know, what do you guys do here at Helena Agra Enterprise? What's your title? And they didn't want – they're rogue employees is what they are, I think. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
How are you doing, sir? And Tyler.
Yeah, good morning there, Tom. Great to be here.
Good work, you guys. Thanks for coming in. Let's get into this segment here. Steve, the Montana Grain Growers Association, give us like the overview for our audience out there that are maybe not in the field every day, how things are going. I know rain really made a difference this year.
Oh, absolutely. The crops were looking pretty bleak in some cases, you know, end of February, early March. And also into April, and that big rain that we had end of May was a life changer. I don't know, when you talk the difference between $2 billion and $5 billion, I would be willing to bet that was $1 billion rain we had.
Yeah.
So the crops turned around at that point, and unfortunately, some guys, their crop was kind of ruined already, and it didn't help. It was too far along.
Oh wow.
And mostly along the High Line there, where we got reports of that. But further south, like right here around Great Falls, I've been complaining about the weather all year, and now I feel a little foolish because things are looking so good right now.
Got some timely rain, right?
Very timely, yeah.
Well, and certainly we want to pull Tyler and Dan here in from Helena. You guys hosting us here and working a lot with the growers. And, you know, Dan and I went to college at MSU. He thought we were just going to come here and talk about the Bobcats National Championship today. But not the only thing we're going to cover. But, Dan, I mean, Steve mentions how variable it was across the region. You guys work with growers all over the Golden Triangle. He's sitting pretty good, but some guys have had a more challenging year.
Yeah, absolutely. Extremely challenging year. These, you know, these growers faced... especially in the wheat market, you know, $4 wheat, $4.50 wheat, coming in the spring with severe heavy drought, cold nights, frost, pink snow mold, different mites, you know, wheat streak mosaic, all kinds of nasty stuff. And then we got that, you know, 8 inches of rain basically and changed everyone's minds. But there was a lot of damage to the winter wheat, but you know, a lot of spring crops look fantastic. And, hopefully, you know, these farmers can hang their hats on those and, you know, plan for this next year.
Tyler, some of those things, had you seen before? I mean, we talked about these mites and issues that growers are facing. What do you do? How do you equip them to survive these challenges?
Yeah, we saw a lot of stress on farmers' faces early this spring, you know, just with lack of moisture and commodity prices being high. And with these timely rains and stuff, it really it turned things around for them. Like it was good to see. We were praying for that rain and we got it. So, and along with like the mites and everything like that, you know, it's kind of a new thing for us. I don't know. You know, Dan was kind of spearheading that, and we were sending stuff off to MSU to get it tested and just trying to wrap our heads around it and try to come up with some ideas for these guys to, you know, combat it.
Tyler, I like what you said. You could see on their faces, right? And that tells me that you guys are a part of that farm and a part of that family. Talk about what value that is to you. And Dan, same thing.
No, for sure. We feel like we're part of the farm. You know, that's where we want to be. We want to be partners with them. You know, we want to be on the a phone call away at all times, or even if we go out and visit them too, we want them to.
Has he ever grabbed a shovel for you?
He doesn't have my territory, so no.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, if he asked, I would. But yeah, no, it's like I say, we want to be partners with everybody.
Yeah, just, you know, echoing what Tyler said, definitely want to be partners with all of our customers. You know, if they don't win, we don't win. And, you know, it's more just, you know, just business, it's friendship. So gained a lot of valuable friendships out of here. No, you know, family and kids and, you know, you get to go to graduation parties and all that good stuff, and you're just part of the family.
Yeah, it's community, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, you guys talked a lot about what you're seeing in the field as far as the issues, and of course we can talk about weather and drought conditions all day long, but Steve, we're going to come back to you a little bit. Serving as the president of the Montana Grain Growers, not only are you seeing the issues in the field, but you also have some policy changes, and you get to watch it from a federal level and see what changes are actually being made. We can talk about the low commodity prices, the high input costs. We throw in the word tariff. We throw in all the fertilizer prices that we've seen, the Strait of Hormuz being closed. I mean, that's just all added pressure. What were you seeing from an organization perspective on some of those major challenges as early spring came around?
So, yeah, we were real concerned with the Strait of Hormuz being closed. It looked for a while like their fertilizer prices were just going to go to the moon and not come back. So, you know, the world is so weird right now. I mean, who would have predicted that, you know, urea would be back down to what it was before this whole conflict? I mean, it's absolutely crazy. So, unfortunately, as a farmer, you can lose a lot of sleep on something that turns out to be not much of anything, which is unfortunate, really.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk a little bit about some of the recent policy changes that we've seen. Of course, we talked a lot about the Strait of Hormuz and the war in Iran and how it added cost. But we have recently seen a big push from the U.S. Department of Agriculture of trying to boost domestic fertilizer production. I know as the president of the Grain Growers, you're the one on the calls, on the Zoom meetings, talking with the leaders, hearing from the producers on what they want to see. What have you seen so far here as we're approaching late summer as far as movement in trying to address the major challenges in the industry?
Well, I recently learned that there's actually two new fertilizer plants being proposed, one by Culbertson here in Montana, and then there's an even bigger one being proposed in the middle of North Dakota. So, you know, these are both $1 billion or more investments, so nothing's going to happen in the near term, but it's very, very encouraging to hear that. And one of the reasons that these are happening is the change to make fertilizer part of the national security thing, right? It's a key chemical that's required to help keep us safe and sound and independent. And so the government is looking at investing in that and bringing those types of projects forward. So I'm very encouraged. I'd be surprised if one or both of them didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know it was a surprise to Coulter and I. We didn't know we'd have to learn so much about different straits across the world when we're trying to report the commodity prices.
Yeah, no joke. Steve, staying on the farm policy topic, you know, we've been waiting to get a farm bill now for, I think it's 3 years, but it looks like we're finally seeing some progress. It may happen this year. Of course, a lot of the Montana grain growers' priorities were passed last summer in the budget reconciliation there that we'll actually start seeing the benefits of this fall. Where are those conversations at? I know the Montana grain growers are heavily plugged into what the Ag Committee are working on.
Absolutely, and we are keeping a very close tie and looking at that, and we actually have Kara, our policy manager, sits in on some of those meetings that happen in DC remotely. And so all the talk is good. All the things are happening like they should. I'm just skeptical.
Right. We've seen this before.
We've seen this before. It's going both ways. Some people want to see a farm bill and put it through like the old farm bill and make it happen. And other people are saying, well, no, let's put it in the reconciliation package and do things differently like they have the last 3 years. So I would not want to predict what was going to happen there any more than I'd want to predict my yield for this year.
Yeah.
Let's talk with Tyler and Dan here about with Helena Agri Enterprises, because you guys are a national organization, right? You got like 42 states, you're $7 billion in annual revenue. This facility is huge. The square footage is huge. So when you guys encounter the kind of uncertainty that makes a farmer like Steve Sheffels go, oh, I'm worried about some things, what can you do? What do you do?
You know, like we talked about this earlier, we can't control the environmental factors, right? But we can sure try to help, you know, these growers make the best possible decision they can with, you know, starting with, you know, sledding and, you know, soil sampling, make sure we're not over applying high price fertilizer. Because us as retailers, we hate anything high priced. Like, we don't want to see anything high priced, just as the farmers do. Like, no one wins in that situation. So, you know, you start out with, you know, not over applying fertilizer and making the right choice on your seed and, you know, just helping them mitigate any other stress that we can do with killing weeds or just making their crops as healthy as possible.
Tyler.
For us right now is investing in our company. Like right now with a lot of ag suppliers are kind of scaling back, but we're going full bore. Like here in Great Falls, we're building a new 14,000 ton dry fertilizer plant. That's going to help us buy better, and that's going to in turn, wow, you know, help them growers out as well. So
congratulations on that. That's a huge investment. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff Reardon, our branch manager, for getting this spearheaded.
And I was just going to touch one more thing. I know you touched on how big Helena is, really. I mean, it's a huge company, but in the same time, almost all the employees in Montana have come from independents. And, you know, we still have that independent mentality where we're not big corporation. Like, we want to be your friends. We want to take care of you. You know, if you got an issue, we want to solve it. And we're going to drop everything we can on a dime and try and get you products and get it out there weekends, nights, days, whatever.
Yeah.
So we just try to keep that independent mentality and not have that big stigmata of a big corporation type thing.
That's key. Let me ask Steve Sheffels again to kind of wrap it up for us. We do have Lee Dahlman standing by, the Montana Wheat and Barley Committee. He was recently on those trade missions, as I mentioned. So if I ask you, Steve Sheffels, again, president of the Montana Grain Growers Association, are we, as far as a farming community, are we running ahead? Are we running even? Are we running behind?
It's really hard to say, and it depends a lot where you are, unfortunately, this year. And then this whole war thing, right? So fertilizer went up through the roof, and then who would have figured that, you know, yesterday I sold some $7 wheat. So, again, I can't predict it.
Yeah, yeah. But you can wake up the next day and...
You know, the wheat's ahead, other commodities not so much.
Yeah.
But earlier in the fall, I didn't have anything I could plant and make money on.
Gotcha.
So at $7 wheat, then the wheat could make some money this year.
Yeah.
In spite of the high fertilizer prices.
That's good news, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's great news. Yeah. Great news.
All right, we'll take a break and come on back with more. Again, thank you guys. That's Steve Sheffels. It's Tyler Visti and Dan Broughton from Helena Agri Enterprises. Thank you guys as well. Colton Young, Coulter Brown, Tom Schultz. We'll be back with more here. Standing by is Lee Dutton. It's from Dutton. It's Lee Dahlman. Sorry, Lee. And we'll get on those trade missions next. Live from Helena Agri Enterprises here in Great Falls, Montana. Helena Agri Enterprises, as I mentioned, is a nationwide company. They were not founded in Helena, Montana. I think Burl said it was West Helena, Arkansas. a number of years ago. But this is like 1957, so they're coming up on like their 50th anniversary here next year. Welcome back here. It's For the Farmers. Tom Schultz alongside. I got some numbers here, and we have Lee Dahlman standing by. We'll talk about trade missions. Very, very important. But if you think about Montana's farms, or actually our nation's farms, and how we're doing so much more with less. Right now, there are about 1.88 million farms across the country. You go back several years, 1935, but it was 6.8 million farms across the country. And so, you know, that's indicative as we welcome Lee Dahlman again, Montana Wheat and Barley Committee Board of Directors, District 4. That's indicative, Lee, of you know, everybody being all in these operations. You probably wear a lot of hats. Welcome. How are you?
Good. Good morning. Thank you for having me here today, Tom.
Yeah. So you get up in the morning and you gotta fix a tractor, and then before lunch you gotta end up irrigating over here, and then you gotta make some calls because the markets are the markets, and you better act now.
Absolutely. You know, it is kind of stressful doing and wearing all those different hats, but as you guys know too, and everybody in the audience there, it is a stressful time, and agriculture is. Yeah. Stressful.
Well, and Lee, you've actually added more hats. Apparently you had too much free time. You stepped on the Montana Wheat and Barley Committee board, and it's a critical arm for our farmers and ranchers, farmers, to be able to use the check off of the wheat and barley to market their crop, to invest in research. And you yourself, you mentioned burning the candle at both ends. You've been traveling literally all over the world the last several years here trying to promote our product.
Yes, it's been an honor to be part of Montana Growers. And to serve Montana growers. And granted, Area 4, which is Teton County and Choteau County, but at the same time, it's the whole state.
You bet.
And it's not just winter wheat. It's durum. It's spring wheat. It's all classes of wheat that we grow. And goes into barley. So you go from Sheridan County, durum growers, all the way to malt barley producers in Fairfield, Huntley, and proud to be part of that.
You bet. Well, let's talk a little about those trade missions. I mean, I know you've been to Asia. You were on Governor Gianforte's tour to Taiwan. When you're over there promoting U.S. wheat, Montana wheat, I mean, what's the value proposition that you promote, and what do they say about it? What are they telling you they want?
Let me go back, and when I go over there, but same time we have the missions, they come over here as well. So they're all also on my farm, and they get to touch it. One of the great stories is I have open storage, just not bins, and they can actually jump in it if they want. They can roll in it. They can, and I told them, swim in it if you want. Here's a big 100,000 bushels. They can touch. They can feel it. They can. That's what they want. That's what the Asians want. They want to see it. They want to know our quality. They want to hear the farmer's story. They want to talk to guys like us and everybody out here. And that's what they want to do. They really appreciate us producers from whether it be Montana, North Dakota, but this northern tier. We grow great quality.
Well, and what's the message when you're able to go on a trade mission, especially with a lot of leaders from Montana specifically, but what does it mean to you when you can go face-to-face with the potential buyers, with the potential market, and tell them and kind of brag a little bit on what we're growing in Montana and tell them it is the best in the country and this is why you should buy it?
Absolutely. I know it gets kind of redundant, but you got to have that connection. You got to have the connection with the people. And the same ones that are on my farm, I'm running into them in South Korea, I run into them in Japan, run into them in Taiwan. That's the kind of connection we need. And you just don't, unless you're there to see how much they value us. And even whether you're talking to a buyer, somebody in procurement, you're talking to their wife, I get my phone out and I show a video. They want to see the farm. They want to see, wow, can't believe it's that big. Can't believe the open skies. Can't believe that kind of stuff. But it's that connection that we bring back home to the producers as well and tell them how much they appreciate us. Well, because they do. They really value their food, their quality. They want to know where it comes from. They just don't. They value it. I guess I can't explain it in words unless you see it.
And as a farmer, what does that mean to you that they value your product?
I'm proud of being a producer, Montana farmer, producer, and goes back to the next step of being the value of what we do as producers in the whole state.
You guys take every step you can to make that quality up there so
absolutely.
People will value it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Lee Dahlman is with us again, Montana Wheat and Barley Committee Board of Directors for District 4 out of Dutton. Colton Young, Coulter Brown, Tom Schultz alongside here. Coulter, you wanted to talk about research because there's a lot of research that goes into this that we don't necessarily know enough about. Ourselves.
You bet. Well, certainly promoting our product is a key role for the Wheat and Barley Committee, but the research into the varieties that we grow is critical. And Lee, I'd have you touch on that. The work that happens at MSU, that Montana Wheat and Barley Committee is investing producer dollars to find solutions to the problems we have, be it wheat stem sawfly or name any issue there is. Talk about that. What goes into those decisions to decide where to invest that money?
Yes. So this year I had the opportunity to be part of the variety release down at MSU and talk about releasing new varieties. This year the big topics were hard red spring wheat and the Durham varieties. And we put two more out there that are semi-solid stem, trying to get higher yieldings. Sometimes that's kind of tough to do when you're dealing with sawfly, wheat stem sawfly, which that is something I am very passionate about because around Dutton area and Teton County and Choteau County, wheat stem sawfly is outrageous. Actually, we're going to start swathing here probably in the next 4 or 5 days just because of the high infestation we had this year of the wheat stem sawfly.
Well, you get the rain, and then everything else kind of grows around that.
Yes,
too, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes. Yeah. But going back to the research, it's very important that MSU breeds and looks at pests and of what we as Montana producers want. And we've got a really good growing conditions. I mean, we're semi-arid, so we don't have a lot of the diseases that we need in the packages like other states require. But wheat stem sawfly is something we've been dealing with that for over 30, 35 years, and everybody says it's going to go away. Well, it hasn't, and I don't know if it's going to. And we got to put more into research of that because, winter wheat is our hard red. Winter wheat is our biggest commodity in the state. So we got to put some dollars towards that. And then, of course, you can't forget about barley, malt barley, malt varieties. Kind of looking into some different avenues, whether it be into food grade. Barleys, pet foods, kind of that. So there's different a lot of different things we're looking at because we got to get into different markets as well. Yeah. We just can't stay status quo.
We'll be talking about that a little more with Mitch Conan here in the next segment. Yeah.
And there's nobody better to talk about barley than the Mitch Conan right there. So.
That's good.
Yes.
Well, Lee, as we wrap up, one of the things I was talking with Dan Bratton before we started here, and he just mentioned how so many of these farms are multi-generational. And I know that that's the case for you as well. Talk about what that means, what family means to this, and the goal to get this farm into the next generations.
Yes. I am a fourth generation myself, so I want to do everything right, make it better than when I had taken over the farm and added on to it. I want to make it better for the next generation, and I do. I have two children and two grandchildren, and expecting the third grandchildren any day.
Congrats. Wow.
Thank you. So that is an official announcement. But it is. It's very important to see the passion I see when you go to Taiwan and go, putting everything in perspective and then come back to Montana. We're just not a producer. We're a producer with passion. We're a producer with a product. And we should be proud of it. And passed on to generations. And those generations have to know as well that what a good product we actually raise.
That's the thing I talked about early, is that, it's more than just having profit somewhere.
Yes.
It's having value in your lives. Yeah. And so I appreciate that.
And farming doesn't stop with dumping at the elevator. There's more than that goes on behind the scenes.
Lee Dahlman, thank you so much. We are live here, Helena Agri Enterprises. It's for the Farmers Tour. Got a good crowd. Thank you guys for showing up today. I appreciate that. Is it because it's cloudy and not 100 degrees already? little bit. That doesn't hurt, does it? Yeah, yeah.
They heard free beer.
That's what it was? Okay. Yeah. Nice idea. That gets me every time. Hey, and we are going to get together a little bit later on. The For the Farmers Tour going on. We got this morning kickoff, live broadcast. But a bit later on, and then in the meantime, we are going to be heading out to numerous producers in the area and really putting our money where our mouth is and thanking them personally there, too. And then at the Sip and Dip, there's a social tonight, and it starts at 5 o'clock. And so we want to see Eric there, but just not in the pool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not as a mermaid.
Eric Sommerfeld is with us here. Mitch Conan is standing by. Eric is from Power Montana and the vice president of the Montana Farmers Union. How are you doing, sir?
Good. Doing good.
Good. Appreciate you coming on. The main issue we want to talk about with you is right to repair, right? Tell our audience out there that maybe, you know, they may not understand this issue. What does that mean?
Right to repair is the ability for the farmer and independent mechanic to get all of the tools and software that dealers, that the big manufacturers provide to their dealers. So you can do that repair yourself or have an independent mechanic do that. And the idea is if there's more competition, it's going to lower the price for that work being done and hopefully not only lower it, but make it more timely. We're going to be hitting crunch time here pretty quick with harvest happening. There'll be times where even just basic things like having an air conditioner done can be a 5 or 6 hour delay waiting for a mechanic to be available. Well, if it's a software issue and it's something that you're tied up directly to that dealer rather than an independent guy, it's even longer. It can be days. Well, we don't have days when it comes to harvest or haying season or even planting season. You know, it's a very time-sensitive industry that we're in, and because of weather, basically. But if you can't get whatever done, that's thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting there that you could potentially lose.
And so, Eric, we've seen probably the biggest movement on the right to repair issue in just the last few weeks with a settlement between John Deere and the Federal Trade Commission to kind of open up some of those tools for producers and independent repair shops. So what's that going to do? What does it mean for the producer on the ground to have this settlement decision?
Again, it goes back to competition. They're required to provide all of the tools and software that they give to any of their dealers. Well, if they give it to 50% of their dealers, they have to be able to provide that to an independent mechanic or the farmer themselves. Or, you know, some big spraying outfit, they have a half a dozen John Deere sprayers. They may want that software to be able to do whatever to repair that software that controls that, you know, $500,000 sprayer if they're running a half a dozen of them or so. Independent mechanics, you know, a lot of these guys get their bread and butter doing the heavy mechanical work that you don't, specialized work that a farmer doesn't have the ability to do. Well, this gives them another avenue to make some income for themselves and potentially speed up the time that you're down. You know, you can get back in the field quicker if you can get that independent guy to show up, if you can't get that dealer to have one of their technicians show up.
You know, I would say a big part of this, and you can kind of take the right to repair issue and find three more stories within that. You brought up having to wait on mechanics. We all know labor shortage and finding the folks that are willing and want to do that. That's a tough job as it is, but it's so interesting to see an issue like this surface because of how far precision technology has come. And when we look at the ag industry, when we start to look at the machinery, you can't just start beating it with a hammer and throw the torch on it to get it to fix. It's all computers now. It's all software. That is a tough challenge to try to figure out how these machines work, because it's all computer chips nowadays. And that's what makes this right to repair lawsuit so much more critical to the producers.
Oh, definitely. You know, back in the old days, we still have some old equipment that I've got some original service manuals from like the 1940s that it literally tells you how to adjust the valves in the service manual.
Yep.
That's something that is very rarely done anymore today. Like you said, so much of it is computer controlled sensors, and this settlement really gives you all the tools. Before, you got part of the tools, you could diagnose it, but you couldn't actually fix it.
Yeah.
And this requires them to give you that to be able to fix it. So you can pair that sensor with that engine or transmission or whatever and actually fully repair that piece of equipment. And that's the thing that needs to be done. You need that competition. And this will provide competition to those dealers to be, you know, either find more guys, like you said, more labor, or those independent guys to come in and, you know, do that kind of work and, you know, hopefully provide that more, that competition.
Eric, steering us away from Right to Repair for a second, we were talking during the break that you planted safflower this year for the first time. I want you to talk about that decision, but also Montana Farmers Union's investment here with the safflower plant.
Yeah, this spring, the potential came. The folks that had had this safflower plant decided that they wanted out. There were some health issues going on, so they decided they wanted to get out of doing it. And we looked at it and going, hey, you know, right now, fertilizer costs, especially the early this spring, fertilizer costs were through the roof. And everybody's like, man, you need something that, you know, potentially is, you could make some money on it and not put as much input costs in it. And safflower doesn't require a lot of nitrogen to be able to raise it. And so we as a board decided, yeah, let's invest in it. And as part of that investment, kind of put your money where your mouth is. And I, you know, planted some and talked several of my neighbors into it. And early on when it was real small and wasn't doing anything and hadn't rained yet, a lot of them were looking at me like, what did you talk us into? But it's just kind of a slow growing crop. It really is drought tolerant, which is another factor that I looked at and said, hey, you know, it's drought tolerant. It just is slow growing. Well, it took off and it looks phenomenal right now. And good thing is, you know, that all that money is going to be staying here in Montana because it's going to be crushed here in Montana. The oil will be sold all around the state, whether it's, you know, independent grocery stores, or we're hoping to get into like MSU and UM, their food services, and replace the canola oil that's there now, because safflower has the health benefits of olive oil, but yet it has the smoke point of canola oil. So you get the health benefits, yet you can heat it really, really hot and do things well with it there. So, you know, hopefully it works out for us, and next year we'll have more.
The farmer talking like a scientist.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to wear all kinds of hats.
Eric Sommerfeld, again, Vice President of Montana Farmers Union. Thank you for stopping by, Eric. Appreciate that. We're going to switch over. Colton Young now has Mitch Koenig. You guys come on in here, too, because we got questions for you as well.
You
let's get this one going. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning.
Well, you know, Mitch isn't one that needs an introduction in our area here, Tom, and he's really the reason we're all here when we start talking about beer and barley, and that's what we all showed up for, right? But, you know, Mitch, I want to say it out front so everyone can hear. I know my generation is not keeping up with the beer consumption. I am excluded from that. I try to support you as best I can. But, you know, that's just something that you're struggling with as an association right now, is beer consumption is down and the barley has to go somewhere.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest number one thing that's out there right now. We've got so many choices for beverages out there, whether it's mocktails, cocktails, whatever, and all the different flavors and everything. But, you know, we've been fighting that battle for years, and we've seen it coming, and we're still trying to move things along. And trying to find new markets is probably the other thing. They do have a non-alcoholic beer out there now. You still got to make it with barley. So they just stripped the alcohol out of it. That's kind of helped a little bit there, too. And then finding new food sources and uses for it, whether it's for pet food or even for human food. We rely on, I think MSU's got some breeding programs going on down there right now where they're trying to come in with some hullus or naked barley, which will go into the human consumption side of things.
Well, you know, go ahead.
I just want to jump in here real quick. I kind of jumped the gun, but Coulter and I were talking on the way up here, Tom. It's exciting to see Montana at the helm of a lot of these organizations on a national level. Mitch Conan, obviously president of the National Barley Growers. We have a lot of representation from a state level on those federal and national organizations. I think that deserves a round of applause on its own. So thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mitch, I was going to ask you about livestock feed for barley, because historically we fed cattle a lot of barley here, and even today a lot of that barley ends up going north to Canada. Is that an opportunity for growth, or at least an opportunity to use some of this barley that needs a destination?
Well, that's the big thing, is a lot of it's going into the feed market, and it's going into the feedlots, whether it's in Canada or even in the state of Montana. You know, the big problem is where the barley growing areas are, you got to put rubber under it to get it somewhere, so, or even in a rail car, so you got an added cost to it. The problem is a lot of that feed barley was rejected malt barley, and so, you know, trying to fight that little misnomer, or how that system works. If it gets rejected, it goes somewhere else, so it goes into that feed market. Well, that doesn't help our bottom line. I mean, we want to maintain that value of that crop, because it is a very valuable crop if we can maintain the quality issues on it. So the barley over the years has gotten what we call hotter, because they like to malt it within 3 to 5 days. So, you know, you spit on it out in the field and it starts sprouting, it's a problem for us. So we try to get a little more dormancy put back into it, but that hurts the other side of the equation. So trying to get things equal on both sides of the equations is what we're trying to do.
So what's the message that you're telling barley growers right now from a national association perspective? We obviously know that the innovation and research is continuing to move forward to try to find those solutions. But as we kind of look at the overall picture, there is a tough challenge right now. So what are you telling them?
Well, right now, nationally, probably the biggest thing right now is a lot of our initiatives that we have going through for fighting pests, diseases, any of that kind of stuff. So maintaining them research dollars at the state level and through our land-grant colleges and our ARS programs, as well as the government agencies that oversee all of this. So we talk to those folks a lot. We do a lot with the Montana Wheat and Barley Committee and quite a few others, and making sure that research funding is getting put in place and is getting put where it needs to be in order to maintain our quality issues.
Well, Mitch, as we approach the end here, I'm curious for how the growing season has been for you. I know in Fairfield you're on the greenfield irrigation there. We had a lot of questions about water early this year, so how did it end up in your neck of the woods?
Everybody, we've been talking about that a lot out there. It was looking pretty bleak right at the beginning, and it didn't look that good for quite a while until June came and we got that million-dollar rain.
$1 million rain.
I call it $1 million rain because I also sit on the governor's drought advisory committee, and they were all touting. We had that meeting right after that rain, and they were all touting this $1 million rain. And I said, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but $1 million doesn't go as far as it used to. But it definitely was. It's going to be $1 billion rain, and it helped us out a lot. We're probably going to carry water through in our system till the end of September. So it really helped us out. I had 6 inches out on the farm in the whole month of July. So.
You know what? As much as we want to thank our farmers, let's thank God for that rain, too, you know, because that was really important. Mitch Conan, again, the president of the National Barley Growers Association. Thank you so much for coming down. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for doing this for the farmers.
We're wrapping up the broadcast, but we got a full day of For the Farmers. It actually kind of tips off tonight at 5:30 for the public at Sip and Dip. I'd like to see you there for the social. Want to thank our guests, Steve Sheffels, Lee Dahlman, Eric Sommerfeld, and Mitch Conan. Want to thank Colton Young and Coulter Brown of the Northern Ag Network. For Thursday's show, we're going to be in Conrad again, Helena Agri Enterprises, Cindy Johnson, Montana Farm Bureau Federation, Corey and Wendy Falk from Sunburst and Shelby, Brian Acklestead, Galata, and Jillian Street from Chester, our director of Montana Egg Department, and Courtney Brown. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Well, we are getting excited. There's about 37 folks here that have gathered from different agribusinesses that are headed out to 6 farms north of Great Falls. And oh my gosh, Tom, these folks are here really just to say thank you, and we appreciate you, and to connect with farmers. The farms we'll be visiting, we affectionately call them Big Will and Little Will, but Will Good and Will Roach's Place, Dave Juliff's, Fred Schaefer, Bill Nelson, and Steve Shuffles. We're going to visit all their farms today. We're going to bring them lunches courtesy of Farmers Union Insurance, and we're just going to connect. We've got a swag bag for them, and just let them know they're not alone. We're with them.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.